Welcome to Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. Well, this is the first show where it was hard to pin down my guests, and that's because my guests could easily pin me down. Wayne Chalice is America's greatest pinner and four-time NCAA and collegiate world champion, coach, Guinness Book of World Records holder, and the father of funk wrestling. We'll find out what that is. Plus, he's an author. Jacob's Cradle, There's More to Winning Than Gold, Charles Gaff, A Mystery Thriller in the World of Wrestling, They Call It Wrestling, A Pictorial Anthology of the American Wrestler, and The Book of Wrestling Trivia. Those who are listening won't know why I'm laughing. And 1001 Questions, all available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. And for everything about Wade, go to wadechalice.com. You can follow him on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, X, and YouTube. And Wade, thanks for being on the show.
Well, thanks for inviting me. It's good to be able to get this down. We had our challenges earlier.
Yeah, we sure did, but we're back in business. Okay, what is funk wrestling?
Funk wrestling is just a as all sports evolve over time to a wide open football passing where it used to be only running, you know, basketball, they didn't have the 3-point arc. Wrestling was take them down, hang on to an ankle, tight waist team, and wait for the clock to end. And there were a lot of 2-1, 5-4 matches. And my style when I got started in wrestling in the 70s, a win was nice, but I wanted to win by 20 if I could, you know. And so I would come up with new techniques that would score a lot of points. So I got away from, it was as the automobile industry, you know, take any car out of the 70s and put them on the street today, and it looks very boring compared to the way the designs are today. And wrestling was boring, in my opinion, back then. And I was taking a 2020 Corvette and transporting it back to the 70s. So when you saw me on the mat, you go, whoa, what was he doing? And initially what they would do is the wrestling coaches would go, what's he doing? It looks like garbage wrestling. And and they said, oh, that'll never work at the college level or international. I mean, that's just off the wall. And so I started having success when states in high school, college, national champs, so on. And people finally said, well, they got tired of calling it garbage. So they said, we'll call it, he's kind of funky, you know, and just different. And then after about 2 years of that, I went, I'm tired of this garbage and funky. Why don't I just shorten the funk a little, funky dough funk, and we'll call it, come up with a new term for it. So I named it funk wrestling just to get away from funky or garbage, sure, which I thought was degrading. And the kids today are, if you saw my videos from the 70s, I'm no different than what you're seeing today. So I wouldn't stand out whatsoever. It's like taking, if you remember the old AMC Avante car back in the 70s from Rambler, you could almost drive it today and it would fit in. It was just way ahead of its time. If you took today's Corvette and took it back to the 70s, you'd have everybody's attention.
Sure.
Well, I wrestled today's style back in the 70s, so I just stood out. And that's the long answer to the short question.
Oh, I like it.
So this,
yeah, today you don't stand out except for the fact that you don't have as much hair as some guys that are practicing wrestling.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, so that works out.
Well, we both add a little bit to the chin.
Yeah, of course.
It falls off and ends up in the back of our shoulders.
How did you segue from the world of wrestling to writing? Because, I mean, you've had a full career and you still have a full career. And in fact, I think you're going to be working on your memoir, correct?
Well, I'm thinking about that, but I don't know who the hell wants to read a memoir other than my mother and maybe one of my kids, you know, and that would probably still bore them to death. To me, memoirs are something a person writes about themselves to fulfill egos. I mean, I don't see a need for them. I mean, you know, if you're doing, you know, Trump could do a memoir.
So you feel
you may like him or hate him, but you know, it would be interesting reading.
So you feel that Winston Churchill should not write a memoir? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I may get to it, but I'm enjoying fiction. Well, of
Okay,
course,
fair
something,
enough.
my memoir might be fiction too, as far back as my mind goes. I'll make a few things up as we go.
How did you segue into the world of writing?
I've always written, although my college boards, I had 1050 in the college boards, of which 794 was my math out of 800. So my English was not very good. And if my English teachers today, God bless them, they're all gone. They're probably turning over in their grave knowing that I'm writing. Jeez, how can you do that? I've always had a creative, my funk was creativeness. I scored very high in creative notes. Now, I may be right or wrong in what I'm doing, but that's sure as hell creative. And my writing just fell into that. And I just finished my third book, and it's going to press next week. And I'm just almost finished book number four. And it's love, CIA, wrestling involved. I think, it's, I think they're pretty good. I mean, I'm getting great reviews.
Well, then they
I'm
must be
just
good
having
if you're
fun.
getting, if you're getting great reviews and it's not from you, then that shows that it's good.
No, a glass of scotch and a keyboard, I'm doing well.
You, I think, are also, would it be fair to say, a philosopher? Because I'm going to quote you here, and it's not about wrestling per se, although I think it is. It's not about writing, although it is. But here's what you said: I believe that people are going to make 1,000 mistakes before they get anything right. So why not get through them as quickly as you can? The object is to fail your way to the top.
I mean, failure is an event. It's not an individual. But people take losses and failures so personally. It's not a person. It's an event in history. The people who win the most lost the most because they tried the most. The object is to get back up, dust yourself off, punch the horse in the face for throwing you off, get back on. I mean, and if you don't, when you die, if you don't have at least 20 scars on your body somewhere, you didn't live.
That's a good point. In fact, someone who really lived that philosophy was Richard Nixon, who you thought would not get back up after losing the presidency and then losing the governorship race in California. He still came back and became president.
How many things that was it Grant or no Abe Lincoln? He had his share of losses before he became president, and notably one of the best presidents we've ever had.
Well, what do you do with the scars if you're a vain person and you don't want them showing? How do you handle that part of it?
The scars on my.
No, I'm saying not you personally, but how does one get the scars? You just talked about it. You should have at least 20 scars before you pass away.
Well, the scars I'm talking about are actually physical scars.
That's what I'm talking about. So if you're a vain person and you don't want physical scars to be to people to see, what do you do with that? I'm asking these metaphorical questions for you. That's why
I'm not sure I know.
I'm
They can't bother you. I mean, its beauty is, well, this is an old one, skin deep. I mean, it's. If you're happy with what you see in the mirror and the person that's behind the facade, then you're going to be very successful in everything you do, from raising a family to a job, to personal achievements.
When you started to come up with these ideas and philosophies, how old were you? Were you a young adult at that point? Were you young enough to realize I have to go through these experiences and there's going to be failure? But as you say, that's an incident. It's not me personally.
Well, I remember, I think it was second grade. I brought my report card home, and some good grades, some not so good grades, and under the comment section, the teacher write down, "Too much of a daydreamer." And mom says, "What's this?" I said, "It's great. Anything has happened, an achievement. Your podcast was a dream at one point in your head that someday I'm going to do this." And you have, you have to dream these things, and what's possible. So it happened early on with me. I just never stop and look back. I mean, I it,
were you
you know why
go ahead.
the rearview mirror on a car is 1/80th the size of the front window?
Why?
I'm glad you ask. Because what's going to happen in front of you is 80 times more important than what's going to happen behind you in the car. If you're going to hit something, it's from the front, not from the back.
Right, but that little mirror helps you at least avoid crashing back. Yeah. So, well, when you first started to experience failure as part of just your experience, were you mature enough to realize, hey, this is, as you said earlier, this is just an incident, this is just an event, it's not me personally, and just keep going?
Well, you know, a failure or a loss, you know, it stings. I mean, you know, you tried something, you know, try to juggle balls and you drop a couple. All right, fine. Bend over, pick them up. What the hell? You know, it's other people that tell you you failed. You know, when you go to away game, away match in wrestling, you know, and 90% of the fans are for the other side, you know, and they may boo you. Well, it takes energy to boo. So these people are using energy on behalf of me.
That's true. I like that philosophy. Or that.
So, you know, I'm excited because they have an opinion about me. And when your mother yells at you, why'd she do that? It's because she loves you and she wants to see you succeed. When your coach yells at you, why'd he do that? Because he respects you and wants to see you exceed. So when the fans boo you or cheer you, it's because they like you and they want to see you achieve. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. Sounds good. I believe it.
Yep.
And I talk myself into it. And so I'm always looking for the glass being half full or half empty. It's always half full.
How important is that in the world of, well, in the world of life, obviously, it's very important. What about in the world of wrestling? Because you were just talking about it with the fans either booing or cheering and how you integrate that into your system. But how important is it to, in this case, get up off the mat and continue wrestling when you're pinned? Or is it a reset automatically once that happens?
I think it's a reset. It's just a learning experience. I mean, you know, I don't want to hear my friends come over. Oh, gee, wait, I'm really sorry. I saw you lost. Boy, I'm sure that'd be a bummer. Get away from me. You know, I did three things well. I screwed up one of them, you know, and it cost me.
Right.
I'm going to clean that up and I'm going to have four good ones instead of three and one.
So they're going to kind of focus on that one thing that you didn't do instead of all the ones that you did do.
We all have a tendency to do that. I mean, listen to the TV news today. I mean, the Democrats, Republicans, oh my God. You know, you think the world's going to come to an end and they're always beating on each other. You know, it takes energy to do that. And the energy is for building, for achieving, for accomplishing something. And that's what I want to put my energy. You know, I never lost a match. Now, the record book says I had a few losses, but I don't remember any of them.
Forgetfulness, huh?
Oh, it's not how fast you can how much you can remember. It's how fast you can forget.
What is it about wrestling for people who are not in that world or don't follow wrestling or don't even occasionally watch it, either on high school level, college level, or even on television, whatever? What is it about wrestling what is the meaning of wrestling for you and for most people that are in wrestling? And you're still involved with wrestling even today. Unless I'm wrong, you're executive director of the Amateur Athletic Union for Wrestling, correct?
Yes.
And we could talk about that too. But first of all, what is the importance of wrestling for you and then for many of the people that you work with?
Well, the military, all they want is wrestlers. Whether it's Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, they're looking for wrestlers because they never complain. You know, the people who make it through Buds, you know, out in San Diego, they're all wrestlers. And they don't quit. They're not going to ring that bell. They don't know how to ring that bell. And in life, you know, wrestling teaches you how to get up one more time. I mean, you know, you're constantly getting knocked down, but you don't quit. Hard work, discipline. I mean, America, you know, if you would require by law everyone to wrestle, you know, for 2 years in elementary, middle school, high school, whatever, the country would be in a much better shape than it is. I mean, respect for one another, hard work. I mean, there's nothing that we can't do, and there's nothing we haven't done, probably. I mean, you know, for us to carry somebody a mile and a half on her back, or, you know, run up and down stadium steps and do it on an empty. They might say boxing or track, or no, that's not true. Wait, football is just as tough. Well, when we get out, you know, if I'm going to equate wrestling to football or track or basketball or tennis, whatever, you know, we run more sprints, we run further distance, we work harder. And if anyone wants to argue with me, I say, yeah, but we also do it on an empty stomach. Nobody else does that on an empty stomach. It's why miserable.
Why on an empty stomach, just out of curiosity?
As a losing weight.
Oh, okay.
I mean, we have weight class.
Very good point. I didn't think of
everyone's
that.
Trying to get down one weight class lower than they should be, you know, because the lower you go, the smaller the kids you are, you have to wrestle, you know, and it's just, you just don't know how to, you don't know how to quit.
There's in many athletics, there's a section for what we call seniors. I don't know if I like that term, but for people of a certain age, and it could be part of the Olympics, it could be various kinds of sports. Is there that for wrestling as well?
No, not really, because you know your body can only take so much, you know, and you're you know, when was the last time you were able to actually touch your toes with both hands?
Oh, 170 years ago. Yeah, I think.
Yeah. But no, you know, if you're a golf, you know, you can play until you drop over. You know, it's not a physically, I mean, it's physical, but it's not. Wrestling, usually you're done. I mean, if you want to hang on and see if you can make the Olympic team, and there are senior divisions, but usually by 35, you're done, you know, and at that point, your body's beat up a little bit and you're kind of tired of it. I mean, you're ready to, you know, tackle something on Wall Street, you know, versus, you know, on a mat.
Sure.
More presidents of the United States wrestled than participated in any other sport.
Interesting.
I mean, we have from George Washington to Ulysses S. Grant, from Abe Lincoln to Eisenhower, from Teddy Roosevelt to Trump. I mean, we have about 15 presidents that wrestled. And I think a lot of that had to do with why they became president. You know, that's that stick-to-it-ness, get in your face and not back down. Teddy Roosevelt, you know, built a wrestling room in the White House. You know, you don't have a basketball court there.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a unique sport. And we control our weight. You don't find a lot of wrestlers, you know, running around in the 20, 30, 40% body fat that we have in America today. They'll outwork you. They'll do it with a smile on their face.
You're giving us a lot of good insight in terms of what the appeal of wrestling and wrestlers is. How does the wrestling world appeal to someone who's just starting out? In other words, what attracts people at a certain age to the world of wrestling? Because there's so many alternatives these days, including, as you mentioned, golf and basketball and football and soccer, sure, et cetera. What is it about wrestling that attracts kids, I guess I would say?
Well, I think everybody's wrestled at one time or another.
Exception being the rule here, sorry.
No. If there's one blade of grass in someone's backyard, there's two boys wrestling over top of it. When you were young, in the backyard, you got into a scrap with somebody.
Well, you're probably right. I just don't remember. But okay, fair enough.
So you start there. And then if you end up on top, you go, hey, I kind of like that.
But is there an active approach from wrestling teams at say, high school or college to attract kids to then be wrestlers on a regular basis, as opposed to just
usually it's the parent, the father who wrestled at one time and pushes his son into it.
Okay.
But you know, we have elementary wrestling programs. We have kids. I'm you know, it's too young, but I think we have one or two that I've seen in diapers wrestling.
Yeah,
in an organized practice. But
yeah, that is
normally they start in five, six years old. And they'll come up through the elementary programs into the middle school and then high school, obviously, and up above. And it's like a pyramid. We start with a broad base, you know, with a lot of kids trying it. And as time goes, and, you know, some kids just gravitate away from it, or they get tired of getting their butt kicked. And they figure, well, maybe there's some other thing I can do. But the experience that they had when they were there carries through. You know, they'll talk about that wrestling experience the rest of their lives.
Pretty impressive. Now, I mentioned earlier that you were executive director of the Amateur Athletic Union for Wrestling. What does that entail, and what does the union do?
Well, the AAU, it was the national governing body for all sports up through the 80s, up through the end of the 1970s. They sent all the teams to the Olympics, track, swimming, diving, boxing, dance, wrestling. The AAU and all sports were the ones who selected the team, gave them uniforms, flew them over wherever they're having, and they competed. And then they got a little bit too big for their pants in the 70s, and they were not being fair to a lot of the sports, like, you know, basketball or their noteworthy sports that they'd see on ABC's Wide World of Sports, you know, gymnastics, track and field, swimming and diving. They would give them maybe a buck and a half out of every buck that they raised from those sports. And the other 50% came out of wrestling or, you know, badminton or other not as well-known sports. And the athletes from all the non-revenue sports rose up and complained about the inequity of it all. And then Congress got involved, and they took the power away from the AAU. 1980 was the first time that then the USOC, United States Olympic Committee, was formed. And then subdivisions under the USOC as USA Wrestling, USA Track and Field, USA Swimming and Diving, USA Gymnastics. And that used to be what the AAU was. And then the AAU took a hell of a beating in the through in the 80s because everybody abandoned the ship and moved over to the USA's organizations. And then eventually the AAU crawled back in, climbed back into the sports youth place. And now the AAU is the largest non-physical YMCA in America. I mean, we have 42 sports, I believe it is, nationally. And we have one headquarters, which is located at Walt Disney World. And that's where I'm located. It's part of Disney. Disney brought down, when Disney opened their Wide World of Sports complex in 1996, they had just built it. And they knew if we were playing word association, I say Disney, you'd say theme parks, animation, you know. And one of the words that would not come out of your mouth was sports, because Walt Disney was not sports. So when they built the sports complex, they figured it would probably take them 10 years to have that word association, when you say Disney, to have the word sports be included with animation, with theme parks and so on. And so they decided that what they'd do is they'd try to buy their way into that, you know, shorten that 10-year period to 3-year period. So they went out and created, or they went out and contracted with the Atlanta Braves, and Disney became the spring training location for the Atlanta Braves, America's team. They brought in the Harlem Globetrotters. That gave them an additional diversity look, as well as, you know, basketball. And they would train here, then they would fly to the different locations when they play the, you know, the Globetrotters versus whoever. And then they brought in the AAU for the youth marketplace, because our headquarters were at that time in Terre Haute, Indiana. And then in the first year we were down here, we brought in over 200,000 kids to Disney's Wide World Sports Complex to participate in judo, wrestling, track and field, cycling, tennis. They have, you know, clay courts and so on. And so, of course, then they would eat Disney's food, buy their T-shirt, go to the theme park, sleep in their hotels. And it worked out very well for Disney and worked out for the Amateur Athletic Union. So basically, we're a very large mobile YMCA now. Wrestling, we have 80,000 athletes, wrestlers, that are part of the AAU. USA Wrestling, our counterpart, who is the national governing body, the NGB, they have 220,000 as by comparison. We're obviously, a fourth smaller. But we do a pretty good job with our tournaments too, and activities throughout the United States, as does all our. And again, Sullivan Award, which is given out every year to the best athlete in any sport in America, And it's done at the New York Athletic Club in downtown New York City. That's an AAU activity. The Sullivan is the AAU's award. So the AAU is well known in a lot of circles. Other circles go, I think I remember hearing of them way back when. We started in 1888. So we are today the oldest sport organization in the world that's still operational. We started in 1888.
And you were there at the time, started with them.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I was 13 then when they got started. If you cut my arm off, you can count the rings and I can prove.
Are you gratified that there is this continuing and perhaps growing, I don't know if it's growing, but certainly continuing interest in wrestling when the figures you just gave us a moment ago in terms of the numbers of kids that are involved in wrestling? Does that bring you a sense of personal satisfaction?
Well, it is in some degree respect, but I'm probably the negative Nelly a lot when I write, because I, you know, the NCAA is not doing what's best in the best interest of wrestling. Our rules committee has their head in the sand, and we started wrestling. Wrestling is the oldest sport known to man. Well, it could be track, might be wrestling. I'm not sure. The only question is, which we can't answer, did Eve run first?
Exactly.
It's either track or wrestling.
Well, the other way to ask it is, did Eve wrestle the bear or run from the bear?
I wasn't thinking bear, but I was thinking Adam, but okay.
Either way, but I mean, the idea is in those days, yes.
That could be there too.
Yeah.
The MMA, UFC, they started in the late 90s, and they're a $4 billion company now, huge. And you should know in Vegas, they're pretty big. So what they've done in 25 years, we couldn't do in 200 years. So there's some things that are broken in our system because we're very similar to, and we provide the UFC with most of their champions. 60 of the top 100 UFC fighters have wrestling background. And there are no karate people in the top 100. There are no judo people in the top 100. There's no boxers in the top 100. 60 out of the 100 of them are wrestlers. And the second highest is Valley Tudor, which no one's ever heard of. And they have about 14 athletes out of the top 100. So wrestling is clearly dominating. And so there's an interest out there. But what we have is we have wrestling can win by pin or by points. The UFC has pinning, kind of in a way, knockout or submission. And people love the knockout or submission. And then in between that, there's been a new development coming out in sport in the last 10 years where it's pin and submit or grappling. It's a hybrid between wrestling and the UFC where it's pin or submit. You either win by pin or you submit and make them say uncle. There's no striking like in boxing. And basically that's the next level, which some parents will let you, mothers will let you get into. But once you start getting punching, get punched drunk, they're not so good about that. But the guys that are doing well, you're taking home $5 million a year. I can stutter on a few words for $5 million a year.
Before I let you go, what about women's wrestling?
Well, I'm glad you ask. Women's wrestling is something that's just taken off in the last 15, 20 years. Basically in the last 10 years, we have more women pro wrestling. Women's wrestling is the fastest growing sport in America. We have 200 intercollegiate programs now with wrestling. We have the NCAA has a NCAA championships for women in wrestling, which we haven't had ever before. And we're in the top, both men and female are in the top five revenue generators for the NCAA, football, basketball, and so on. We're in the top five as revenue generating sports.
That's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Wade Challis. He's America's greatest pinner and four-time NC2A and collegiate world champion, as well as coach, Guinness Book of World Records holder, and father of funk wrestling. For everything about Wade Challis.
I can't wait to listen to this. It sounds like he's really important.
I think he is. For everything about Wade, go to wadechallis.com. You can follow him on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, X, and YouTube. And Wade, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
And join us every Thursday for a new schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.